And now, the Great International Tune-In.
Hello, I'm Moxie. Welcome to the Great International Tune-In on TNT, TBS, the Cartoon Network, best tune-in ever. I come from planet Dogtavia, and on my planet, I am the ruler. Someday, dogs will take over the world. Ah, ha, 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 ha. Do you believe that?
No.
Welcome to Checkered Childhood, a classic Cartoon Network podcast covering many, many years of Cartoon Network's history.
I'm Funky. I'm Fresh.
Hi, the Powerpuff Girls. Hi.
Not now, boy. I'm busy. Tonight's the third night.
Power on that time machine and let's turn 3D like it's 1993. Greetings, Toonheads. It's your classic commander and host, B-Dubs. And this is Checkered Childhood, a classic Cartoon Network podcast dedicated to all things animation from the 1990s and early 2000s. As you can tell, today we're taking another field trip through the timeline of Cartoon Network. This time, to a year when the Checkered Channel was still learning to crawl, but lifted itself up for a moment, with an experimental mascot eager to host his own show, despite Cartoon Network's approval, of course. Buckle up, because there's enough material for two episodes to cover in this one. Ready for another Toontastic voyage? Alright, let's travel back to the past for a second time. Hold on to your butts, because it's going to get bumpy. The year is 1993. A tumultuous time full of conflict and strife, which proved to be a tall order of problems for Bill Clinton to fix since being sworn into office. Incidents such as the Waco siege in Texas leads to a compound going up in flames, killing 76 people, including FBI agents and cultists, while the World Trade Center faces bombings in its garage, killing 6 in New York City. And to round things out, a massive flood washes over the American Midwest, causing $15 billion in damage. However, life back then wasn't all doom and gloom, as all eras have their fair share of setbacks and victories. After all, we did get plenty of new animated TV series this year, including Sonic the Hedgehog on ABC, Animaniacs on Kids WB, Rocko's Modern Life on Nickelodeon, and even a couple on our favorite Checkered Channel that I'll mention later. When we last left off with our millionaire media mogul Ted Turner, his 24-hour cartoon channel was all revved up and ready to go, full of comfort and familiarity to diffuse the tension in the air on the airwaves. And thanks to the help of Mike Lazzo and Betty Cohen, the network was able to make creative decisions to help them germinate an identity of their own, thanks to the fertilizing properties of several acquired cartoon libraries, such as MGM, Hanna-Barbera, and more. Let's take a look, month by month, at all the noteworthy stuff happening on Cartoon Network this year, shall we? Wasn't much happening in the winter months, nothing I can really find. But starting on April 30th, Cartoon Network Latin America launches in English, Spanish, and Portuguese to eager viewers beyond the United States.
Hi, I'm Ted Turner, and we're pleased to be bringing you the Cartoon Network for Latin America and the Caribbean. With today's launch, Turner Broadcasting takes yet another step in offering the very best in family programming to viewers around the world.
Moving on to May 29th, in a surprise turn of events, Race Bannon from The Adventures of Johnny Quest crushes the competition, beating out Wilma Flintstone and Jane Jetson for the title of Favorite Cartoon Mom in a viewer contest poll. It's a very odd yet amusing result. And I'd love to hear your take on this contest, Toonheads, and why they ended up the way they did for the winner. In June 12th to June 13th, we have our first notable marathon that will repeat years and years after its initial airing, with June Bugs.
This is a June Bug.
This is June Bugs on the Cartoon Network, a 25-hour marathon of our biggest star. So call your local cable operator and make sure you're getting the Cartoon Network, because we're the only place you'll find June Bugs. Saturday, beginning at 7 on the Cartoon Network.
It was an all-day marathon that was on Cartoon Network and shot up to the number one spot for basic cable rated TV at the time. The marathon premiered at 8 p.m. Saturday, concluded on 9 p.m. Sunday, and would later continue as an annual event from 1993 to 2002, and then briefly being revived from 2012 to 2013. Nothing but Bugs Bunny cartoons here. Jumping forward a bit to September 5th, we have the first of Hanna-Barbera's original 90s cartoons, Two Stupid Dogs, premiering, which featured a Ren and Stimpy-inspired duo of dogs going about their days doing, you know, dumb stuff with random things and people. A week later, on September 11th back in 1993, We had the second of Hanna-Barbera's original 90s cartoons premiere, which was SWAT Cats, The Radical Squadron, showcasing dark, action-packed plot lines across a feline cityscape. Just a couple weeks after, at the end of September on the 26th, we have Martin Short reprising his 80s SNL character Ed Grimley to host his animated show The Completely Mental Misadventures of Ed Grimley, exclusively for Cartoon Network.
Take a walk on the weird side, please, with The Completely Mental Misadventures of Ed Grimley, today at 12:30 p.m. on Cartoon Network.
Makes sense since Hanna-Barbera originally produced the series. Moving on to October 2nd and 3rd, we have the first birthday blowout promotion to celebrate the first year of Cartoon Network being a channel. And it aired from 6:30 a.m. to 11:45 p.m.
Don't miss our first birthday blowout all this weekend on the Cartoon Network.
Turned out 250,000 callers light up the phone lines with glee in efforts to win mystery prizes offered by the cartoon stars. Moving into November, we have the Great International Tune-In on November 26th, which was a special cross-promotional event where all five currently owned Turner channels, TNN, WTBS, TBS, CNN, and CN, synchronized to showcase Moxie as a brand new character and advertise the original mascot for Cartoon Network during its 14-hour programming event, telling jokes and also doing impressions for preteen viewers on TV.
Today, we will witness a rare astrological phenomenon. Cartoon meteors will pass through our solar system, causing a realignment of the planets. The effect will be seen worldwide on TBS, TNT, and the Cartoon Network, with cartoons all day for people around the world.
Lastly, we wrap up with The Moxie Show premiering a week later on December 5th, 1993, promising revolutionary entertainment as the first live computer-generated cartoon appearing on air in a pirate TV setting. Voiced by Bobcat Goldthwait and later joined by Penn Jillette and Chris Rock, each voicing his co-host Flea.
Hi, I'm Moxie, and, that's Flea, and,
think you better dance now!
Work it, girl! I mean, bug! I feel funky!
However, the gimmick would prove to have little staying power, as it was pushed aside in favor of other new shows and events, until its cancellation 3 years later. But before we wrap up this quick trip through Cartoon Network history of 1993, I think it's important to take a magnifying glass to the Moxie Show and analyze why this show came into being, as well as what they're trying to go for with its appeal. As mentioned before, The Moxie Show premiered November 26, 1993, during the International Tune-In, and had its official show premiere date on December 5, 1993. It would go on to run on the channel until May 25, 1996. It was created by Colossal Pictures, and it was directed by George Evelyn, Tim Boxell, and Greg Harrison. The show was written by Scott Sedita, Jonathan Groff, Tim Boxell, Matt Maihilaro, Matt Harrigan, Penn Jillette, and Bobcat Goldthwait. The musical score was by David Wayne Powers, and the theme song was called De La Funk by Rene Day Whale. The runtime was sometimes 30 minutes, but sometimes 60 minutes too. It really depended on the circumstances. So diving a little deeper into Moxie's origins, I found out that the anthropomorphic dog was being denied his own show by Cartoon Network itself. Kind of a tongue-in-cheek premise, wouldn't you say? In an act of revenge, Moxie slaps together his own pirate broadcast studio in the maintenance closet while posing as a janitor at Cartoon Network so he can take over the airwaves with classic cartoons his way. Most people remember the show featuring short jokes and commentary with a dash of patchwork charm from Moxie through wraparound segments, complemented by classic tunes including Popeye and Tom and Jerry. As the series evolved, Moxie, who was voiced by Goldthwait, gained a companion and sidekick named Flea, who was first voiced by Penn Jillette, then later Chris Rock, to balance out the Mutt's happy-go-lucky personality with a level-headed attitude, and to give the duo more attention between the shorts. Most of their interstitial segments involve Moxie and Flea talking about a random topic in a living room while watching various cartoons featured on their show on TV. And the segments were about 1 to 2 minutes in length to keep the pacing quick within the span of 30 minutes. Originally, When Cartoon Network premiered its own animation station on October 1st, 1992, 1 year prior, one of its executives, Betty Cohen, conceived an idea where they wanted animated skits in between cartoon segments, and a host also available live for special occasions. She and the network execs envisioned having a live cartoon being on stage in video production to make the show feel more interactive and innovative. However, due to technical limitations of producing a live animated 3D host at the time, Cohen pivoted to seeking help from the San Francisco-based animation house Colossal Pictures, a production company specializing in converging real-time applications with new media in 1993. They seemed like the perfect match to achieve this ambitious goal with their character-driven portfolio, and thus they began the development of the character right away.
From the start, it was obvious that the project would involve the marriage of traditional creativity and brand new technology. Like the development of any character, the first step was the most basic. We asked, who is he?
Moxie's design went through over 100 different concepts before landing on the orange anthropomorphic dog as their final choice. They reported him having, quote-unquote, jointless limbs and exaggerated facial expressions to account for his wonky demeanor and the way he moves through a set, composed according to cartoon logic, where heavier objects were on top shelves and lighter ones were on the bottom. Hey, you never know when you'll need to drop a bomb on a toon's head. That's why it's on the top shelf. Speaking of the set, there were unfortunately more limitations to the development of the set. Instead of generating a fully 3D one, which they were initially hoping for, Colossal Pictures instead opted to fabricate a miniature stop-motion style set to make the concept work, utilizing forced perspective to create depth. This was mainly due to budget constraints, but they worked with what they had. The resulting visuals gave the show, as director George Evelyn and art director Cindy Reed puts it, quote-unquote, a wanky view. The set itself contained models of a projector and projection screen, two TV monitors, a transmission machine with a cable, and a janky-looking shelf featuring a ridiculous assortment of cartoon props. Once development was complete, Moxie will go on to host the Great International Tune-In on Friday, November 26, 1993, via TNT, TBS, and Cartoon Network for a two-hour event live 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and it reached as far as Latin America and Europe as well with its broadcast. Here, Moxie set the stage by hosting Bugs Bunny cartoons on TNT, Cartoon All-Stars on TBS, and a special A to Z programming lineup on Cartoon Network, ranging from Adam Ant to Zorak, according to a Newsday 1993 article. Moxie, as Cohen phrased it, would even interact with different kids from around the world, puppeted via motion capture by actor John Stephen Nunn, while Goldthwait spoke through a microphone in a separate sound booth beside him in the studio, to further bridge the gap between computer animation and human creation. However, the setup was far more complicated than imagined. For one, the puppet suit consisted of big diving flippers, cardboard oversized hands, and a long beak-like board on a hard hat helmet, all attached to sensors, mind you, so the actor could act and move in consistency with Moxie's cartoonish, exaggerated physique. Something that doesn't work too well when confronted with the physics of reality.
Since this was all pioneering technology, Colossal had to create the animation system and the software to go with it. The process is actually a high-tech form of puppetry. This allows Moxie to move in a more human way.
To further drive Moxie's cartoonish behavior home, the movements recorded through the mocap suit were later distorted and exaggerated in software to give Moxie, quote, a rubbery feel. Combined with a few post-production animated flourishes such as ears wiggling and eyes blinking, the believable nature of the live tune was finally complete after all this tweaking. Though the rig was intended to keep Moxie from reaching into his own geometry, it wasn't very sustainable. Luckily, the segments of the Moxie Pirate television show kept the animation limited as to not overexert Stevenson in the makeshift mocap suit. Moxie would go on to host his own Cartoon Network show after the event just 2 weeks later, on December 5th, 1993. The Moxie Pirate Show. Once the show got its start on Sunday nights, it lasted for 1 hour in programming blocks. Then, the show would later become rebranded from the Moxie Pirate Show to simply the Moxie Show, and was later reduced to a half hour with the introduction of his 3D Flea sidekick. As for the name being briefly changed to the Moxie and Flea Show, for just one episode on December 25th, 1995, during its airing, maybe they did it because they wanted to appeal to kids who happened to be in front of a TV while opening presents on Christmas. It wasn't very clear why they made the decision. According to its very brief Wiki fandom page, only 24 episodes have aired during its 3-year stint, though I personally never seen or remember any of them from that time beyond snippets of Moxie acting goofy in his janitor closet studio. My focus was on other kid-oriented channels at the time.
Is this thing on? Is it on? Hello? Woo! Hey, hi! Shh! No one at the Cartoon Network knows that now I have my own cartoon show. Actually, I wasn't sure myself, but I think when I press this button...
During its early development phase, Moxie sported a yellow shirt with a white M on it, light purple nose, and solid red pants. Once he starred in the first iteration of the Moxie show, the cartoon pooch sported a solid yellow shirt, large flat shoes with black and white inverted colors on each foot, and black slash red checkered pants, which you'll notice in the episode art of today's episode on our podcast. Once it became, quote, the Moxie and Flea show circa 1995, he later adopted a more hip, kid-like attire with green and black horizontal striped shirt with gray jeans and matching black and white shoes this time. His pupils also changed from being red and blue to both being green irises with black pupils. Flea also got revamping this time too. He switched from a red, white, and blue propeller kid hat to a blue fez, and both of his eyeball colors changed from green and yellow to just yellow. His voice actor also shifted from Penn Jillette to Chris Rock. I can imagine with all these changes going on in such a short period of time, it was hard to keep track of what was going on with this character for kids watching at home, which might have attributed to its difficulty kind of connecting with audiences, let's say.
Hello, world, and welcome to Art with Moxie.
And speaking of reception, I would say that despite technical ambitions fueling this mascot concept, the Moxie show did not skyrocket high into orbit as Cartoon Network had initially hoped. The show was criticized for putting too much emphasis on mocap technology and not enough on making the characters relatable to the viewers. The writing has also been slammed for being nonsensical, confusing, and a bit shallow at times, making it hard for the show to click with its audiences beyond the stock cartoons in between. The Philadelphia Inquirer even went as far to say in response to the premiere that, quote, Moxie is the most overhyped and disappointing cable network television show this fall, unquote. Ouch. Guess people would rather go with what they know than take a chance on something new. Thankfully, though, Cohen, Lazo, and other Cartoon Network execs learned from their mistakes with making this show and took those lessons to heart moving forward after this show's cancellation. Thankfully, while it may have been just the beginning, it was definitely not the last time we'd see original content created specifically for the channel. Even now in the internet age, the show is still appreciated by fans, here and there, mostly in small communities who like looking for lost media or retro Cartoon Network shows. As Screen Rant once ranked the Moxie show as number 10 on the original Cartoon Network shows of the 90s list that it created, beating out other shows like Big Bag and Mike, Lou, and Og of the time. In 2011, it was reported that fans of the Moxie show uploaded episode clips along with commercials featuring the dog on YouTube as a means for other cartoon fans to access this lost and forgotten content. Many of the clips are interstitial straight from the show, both the original and Flea Sidekick versions. Currently, with exception to the pilot, none of the 24 full episodes exist online, as far as I know. In fact, I did find one over on YouTube. In the Collective Animation Archive channel over there, you can view a rare Moxie and Flea pilot entitled Abducted from a ripped production VHS tape. It's about 17 minutes in length, and while the story or the dated style didn't quite gel with me, it's still worth a look for lost media enthusiasts and cartoon fans alike to better understand the evolution of this experimental short-lived Cartoon Network original.
Moxie, 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 something's been bothering me.
What, Flea?
What's up with that nappy-wappy orange do you got working?
Convertible hair!
If you want to see the process behind Moxie's creation as well, there's also a behind-the-scenes 10-minute special called, quote, The Making of Moxie, over on Video Archaeology's YouTube channel, so you can witness firsthand how the character came to be and what kinds of effort went into making it, rather than just taking my word for it. While Moxie is mostly a fever dream in the back of most Cartoon Network fans' minds, he did make some appearances later on in other Cartoon Network shows such as OK KO, Let's Be Heroes, specifically in the episode Crossover Nexus, where he's featured as a stone statue with one of Ben 10's transformations and later being restored to his cartoon self during the episode. This meta-referential cartoon spares no expense in giving cameos to even the most obscure of characters, listing at least 60 across Cartoon Network's timeline with more to be discovered. That is quite an impressive feat for one show to pay homage to its past. And I'm glad they were able to do that, just like we're able to pay homage to Cartoon Network's past through this podcast.
That cartoon was great. Maybe sometime in the future they'll have like a TV channel that just shows cartoons all the time.
All the time?
Yeah.
That'd be great.
So now that we have traversed Cartoon Network in 1993, what exactly did we gain from this experience? Well, Cartoon Network exercised its abilities to collaborate by integrating programming with other Turner-based stations. It was a bold advertising move, but it did bring viewers to the tube en masse from other channels even, to give them more brand awareness of what Cartoon Network was all about, or at least what they had to offer. Now that Cartoon Network staff had gained their momentum by creating original programming blocks using pre-existing animated media, the goal was to take it one step further with marathons aimed at baby boomers and their kids too, along with testing the waters with giveaways, special anniversaries, and a new experimental cartoon canine named Moxie, which we just covered, that only us diehard Cartoon Network fans would love. Whether we see these content efforts as a success or not, there's no denying that the momentum and lessons gained in this year would carry Cartoon Network to its next legacy milestone, which would be the world premiere Toon / What a Cartoon Show in 1995. Oh yeah, we also got Squat Cats and Two Stupid Dogs and Space Ghost Coast to Coast, in case you forgot about them. But we won't cover Space Ghost until we get to next year, 1994, in a later episode. Before we close, I do want to mention a piece of lost media before I move on that I came across during research. By now, Ted Turner, Betty Cohen, Mike Lazo, and crew were putting together promo material to entice networks to carry their channel as a part of various cable packages, because that's how we got TV back then, subscriptions. One of the items they used to gain attention to their budding channel was a VHS tape called, quote, A Taste of Cartoon Network, which featured various highlight commercials of all their programming blocks, along with a sampler plate of 6 animated shorts. These shorts on the tape were Huckleberry Hound, Freeway Patrol, Tom and Jerry, Slicked Up Pup, Droopy, Deputy Droopy, Space Ghost, simply titled Zorak, The Jetsons, Uniblab, and Merry Melodies, Wakiki Wabbit. Why they picked these shorts over others? I don't know exactly. But my guess is that it's a diverse enough helping of the various genres and characters making Cartoon Network memorable. So there's something here to appeal to everyone among network execs across different channels to draw them into their own channel. My personal favorite is the Deputy Droopy cartoon. Those outlaws try to break in the sheriff's safe full of money, and Droopy constantly causes them to make loud noises to wake the sleeping chief up. It's got some serious laugh-out-loud cartoon comedy. Tex Avery's work never gets old. You can actually watch the promo video in its entirety now on the Internet Archive while it's still there. So what are my memories of Cartoon Network in 1993? Don't really remember much of it. I do remember, though, watching Moxie during a great international tune-in over on the TBS side of things, and how everyone else that was featured on TV, mainly a bunch of kids in this like brightly colored room, had bowl haircuts, V-neck sweaters, and turtlenecks just like me. Don't judge, it was the fashion at the time. But I do have faint recollections of watching the June Bugs and Ed Grimley marathons with my mom then, since she too was into those cartoons when she grew up. I was a big fan of Toonheads as well, for the trivia, so that particular programming block was a mainstay whenever I tuned into the channel, and it helped me get into Looney Tunes as a result. More than anything, I did wonder why Moxie had a strange voice and moved so fluidly compared to other cartoons on the channel, so that was the lasting impression it gave me when I first saw it on TV. And now I know why it was like that. So, why does the year 1993 of Cartoon Network matter? By now, Cartoon Network attracted the viewership they needed to branch out into unexplored territory. The nostalgia of cartoons from past decades were an effective way to rope in older viewers in particular who grew up with these cartoons. Now that they were here and engaged with their kids, Cartoon Network's additional demographic empowered them with confidence to develop new things for the channel and keep finding creative avenues to hook younger viewers into their programming. If nothing else, just seeing which colors or images representing the checkerboard pattern behind the cartoons they were advertising were enough for people like me to be magnetically pulled away from, say, Nickelodeon or Fox Kids into Cartoon Network. And I still love the aesthetic to this day. Heck, it's why the episode art in this podcast looks the way it does. So, bravo to them for taking chances and remixing old cartoon ideas into a fresh new way based on what they did this year. So, in closing, what stood out to you most when watching Cartoon Network in 1993? If you want to share your thoughts, email me at checkerchildhood@gmail.com. You could also reach out to me on Instagram at checkerchildhoodpod or our YouTube channel, which is Checker Childhood. You can also rate and review this podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever else you happen to listen to it, so I can gain momentum just like Cartoon Network did in the checkerboard era and steadily grow to reach new Cartoon Network lovers everywhere. If you do, I promise to share your review with our fellow listeners in a future episode. It doesn't even matter whether it's good, bad, or neutral one. I just want to hear from you. Lastly, if you know any of your cartoon-loving friends who would like to hear more about classic Cartoon Network history, do them a favor and introduce them to this podcast. All right, check in next time, Toonheads, when we pull out of a bag one of the only live-action shows of the checkerboard era of Cartoon Network to give it a robust retrospective. Just which show am I referring to? Not many to narrow down, to be honest. I think you can figure it out. But you'll just have to listen in to the episode 9 to find out more about what we're going to talk about. Thank you very much, Toonheads, for taking the time to be here with me today. There's a lot to cover across this year of Cartoon Network, but I had fun sharing the findings with you. Hopefully we can do it again real soon once we journey to the year 1994 in a later episode. Cartoons are a passion of mine, and it's always a treat to share that passion with others who understand it. After reviewing this year, Moxie did give me an idea. I think it's time to make my own pirate show and see how I can take the world by storm. But first, I have to find a closet to start it. Have a tunerific day, my mocap suited buddies. Later.
Hey, where's me? That was my shot!
You have been cut, removed, deleted.
They can't do that! This was my big prank!